This is Joanne Ray with Senior Marketing Specialists. Welcome to another edition of The Human Connection. I have to apologize right out of the gate here. Woke up this morning with a little nasally and sore throat and a little bit of cough, but the show must go on. So I apologize for my voice in advance. So as you guys know that have listened to this before, this is for me always the highlight of my week when I get to sit down and have these conversations with people that I've known throughout my career. In different facets of my career. What I want to be able to bring to you all as listeners are not just the agent side or not just the carrier or the FMO side of our industry, but people who are out there really making a difference in our industry. And we've had just some huge honors of being able to sit down and talk with some people who are literally at the top of their game in all different parts of our industry. And today, I'm super excited to introduce you to our guest today, who comes from us with a little bit of a different background, maybe than the insurance industry. But again, we'll tie all these together so you can see how all of the pieces will fall into place here for us. But my guest today is somebody who has meant a tremendous amount to our company for a lot of different reasons. We've relied on John over the years for a lot of different things that he's helped us with our company, but has one of what I feel like is the greatest official title that I've ever introduced of anybody. So welcome, please. This is John Thomas, who is Chief People Officer. I love that. For the Health and Senior Services right here in the state of Missouri. So good morning, John.
Hey, good morning, Joanne. I've been looking forward to this for the last couple of weeks since we got it on the calendar.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be fun. So again, the format will be very, very loose here today. We'll have a conversation just like you and I have had many, many, many times over the years. But as I introduced you again as Chief People Officer, which I love that title. I don't know if you came up with that or if somebody did, but I want to hear more about that.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your background. Again, you have a very diverse background. I love your resume. Our paths have crossed on a number of different occasions over the years, but tell us a little bit about your professional background, and then we'll dig kind of into the personal side a little bit too. But what got you to being Chief People Officer at the state of Missouri?
Absolutely. Chief People Officer. Really, I don't know who was the first. I think Google might have been the first, of course. Laszlo Bock was the Chief People Officer for Google. Right. And it's kind of the leader of the human resources function for an organization, kind of a newer to focus more on the human side and the people side than just being transactional, which HR has kind of been thought of throughout the years. And so we wanted to kind of take a new twist and emphasize that we are really focused on the people side. And as far as how I arrived here, I tell folks, I got into HR kind of in a circuitous route. It wasn't on purpose. But I've always been involved in a people business. I grew up in a pastor's home. And so I grew up around people, and I learned to love people, and I learned a lot about different personalities. And so whether it's been in the faith realm, or if it's been coaching, or if it's been in the school systems, teaching, or now as in human resources, I've always been involved in the people business and just kind of believe in people and think that we can pull leadership out of people. It's not that we pour leadership into people, but that we want to pull leadership out of people. And because there's leadership in everybody, it's just finding it and helping them realize their potential.
I love that. So I've heard you say that phrase before. You don't pour leadership into people, you pull it out. And I would think with your diverse background from the ministry to coaching, to HR, to leadership courses that you've taught and been a part of, that's kind of the thread that probably runs through all of that, right? Talk to us about kind of, you know, the football coaching days. It was high school, right?
I coached at high school, and then was fortunate enough to be at Truman State University as an adjunct coach for almost eight seasons.
Wow. And
from 05 to 13, and just I have discovered that coaching is really about taking people from where they are to where they want to be. If we go back to the days of stage coaches, and today with the big coaches that carry people from one place to another, though, the origin of the word coach is to take people from where they are to where they want to be. And so coaching is coaching, whether it's on a field or in a boardroom, an office or a court. Teams are teams are teams are teams. They form and they function in much the same way. And there are a lot of principles and ideas that are very transferable. And so it's been refreshing. People ask me if I miss coaching, and I say every single day. But I get to do it now in a little bit different venue. But it's some of the same principles are very transferable.
So I'm guessing you don't get to carry a whistle now anymore, John?
I don't.
Is that the part you meant? So high school football to college football, again, the messaging is the same, the fundamentals, it's blocking, it's tackling, right? But as you go from the high school arena to the college arena to the boardroom arena to now, you know, the state of Missouri and health and senior services arena, I have to imagine that, again, there's so many similarities there, but what do you find is the biggest misconception, if you will, about working with people and leading people, whether you're coaching them on the field or you're coaching them in a boardroom or in a classroom or as a part of your job right now? What's the biggest thing that you just wish you could wave a magic wand and everybody would understand about everybody else?
That is a great question, Joanne. And I think if I could wave a magic wand to say, this is what I wish people could understand, is that unfortunately in our society, we've developed this cynicism and this distrust of leadership. And in many cases, rightfully so. Mm-hmm. And so the distrust and the misconceptions of leadership are a barrier. And I wish we could just wave that magic wand and kind of have a do-over or a start over. And so it's really trying to establish trust from the start, because rightfully so, people are very distrustful of leadership. And so that's one of the things that I wish that we could start over with.
I like that. And I always go back whenever I think about that type of a concept, I always go back to probably one of the pivotal moments from my career, personal life, parenting, management, leadership, everything, was when we read and then studied The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. Still today, I have 3 copies. They're everywhere. I use them literally as a Bible in so many ways. But one of the things in that book that I, again, it took me studying it, not just reading the book, but studying that book with a group of people, the word paradigm shift. Yeah. And what that means when you come into a table, whether you're at a, you know, you're working with a student athlete or you're working with an employee, or it doesn't matter, somebody in your family. When two people come into a conversation, whether it's conflict or non, to understand truly what that other person is coming to that table with, to look at through your glasses, but to also see things through their glasses. That's the paradigm shift that he talked about in that book, of when that happens and you finally get to see things maybe through somebody else's glasses instead of just your own, that's when everything changes. And to me, that's kind of what you just described in the trust, distrust. I think people come into a conversation or a conflict or a meeting or a boardroom, whatever, already walking in the door, preconceived notions, preconceived distrust, preconceived outcomes, preconceived everything based on their glasses. And they don't take the time or have the resources or have the understanding to look at it through that other person's glasses. And to me, that's when we studied that book and spent so much time on that chapter, to me, that's been one of the biggest differences in my life of handling conflict, handling conversation, handling anything, is to not just sit down with your glasses on, but to see things through the other person.
Absolutely. And I think I would just tack on maybe another, if I could wave a magic wand, it would be for leaders to possess a little more empathy and make that intentional effort to put yourself in as somebody I sat in one of their trainings said, walk a mile in their moccasins, to just like put yourself in their shoes and try to see it from their angle. I think leaders would see a lot more results.
Yep. No, I love that. And again, you're going to keep saying things that are going to trigger 10 more questions from me, but in talking about leadership, let me back up a little bit and reintroduce some ways that we've worked together in the past. So when introduced to you, one of the things that we very quickly learned is that you have a very uncanny ability and talent, God-given talent, to come into a room and be able to dissect, if you will, with very few questions ahead of time. We've asked you to come in from a leadership standpoint and work with our young and up and coming leaders and those that have been around 100 years, like myself, too, are always, always, always learning. But one of the things that we've kind of picked at you the most at is management versus leadership. Yeah. There is a need for both. There's a place for both. We have to have both. Walk us through just the abridged version, if you will, of what you see is the difference between management and leadership and how one goes from one to the next, or maybe they don't.
That is a great question. It's a great debate, really, when we get into those realms and have those discussions and debates. I think the best analogy that I can give, and I used it just last week, is the difference between a coach and a referee. Their functions are very different, but their functions are both needed. And I think in some roles, there are times that I have to be a manager and there are some times that I have to be a leader. And so I hesitate to say I'm either in management or I'm in leadership. I think people can lead from every seat, but when it comes to a function, there is a distinct difference. We need rules and we need boundaries, and the officials are there to kind of enforce those rules and make sure that the boundaries are that everything stays within the boundaries of the operation. But the coach is a little more long-sighted, has a little more far-sightedness and has vision and will experiment with the makeup of the team. They're concerned about the growth. They're concerned about the development. They spend time on people who not only need the attention, but those who deserve the attention. So that's the best quick analogy that I can give. Both are needed, but we probably find ourselves in both at times.
I love that. Yeah, no, that's a great, I'm a very visual person. So to me, that's a very visual example. You know exactly why that referee is there, to make sure that systems are followed, processes are in place, things are in order, and rules are followed. You know, we've got a mission here. We've got four quarters, two quarters, whatever game you're talking about. We have a very a specific time frame that we have in order to get this very specific task done. To me, you're absolutely right. That describes what a manager is in every company. And then the leadership being that coach, that they're here today for the next 90 minutes or 2 hours, whatever the game is, to accomplish the same goal that referee is. But what happens, I think, off the court maybe is just as vital between a referee and a coach. It is the same thing as management and leadership. It's what happens off the court, right? It's what happens when we go home It never ends, right? It never, ever ends. That coach is running plays in his head all night. He's watching film. He's reading books. He's studying up. He's watching other players. He's watching other teams. He's interviewing other coaches. He's talking to, you know, big recruits, trying to get them in. Always, 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 always working. And then that 90 minutes of the game is where the kind of referee is the star, if you will. That's his main job. The coach is much more off the court, I think, than on. So I love that analogy. I'm going to use that a lot of different ways, I'm sure. So let's talk about some of the other roles that we've, a couple of the ways in which we've utilized your services, John, and has just been invaluable to our company. But I started with kind of just being introduced to you as a teacher and expert and student of leadership. So one of the things that I've always considered my job as the leader of this company, as a leader of this company, is to make sure that everybody beside me, in front of me, behind me, coming up in the company is ready for the next step up. We're never, ever, ever, you've been around us a long time now, we're not a dormant company by any means. We always want to be growing and going somewhere. And in order to do that, you've got to have the right people. Got to have the right people on the bus. You got to get them in the right seats. And then you got to be preparing them for their next step. And part of that preparation, I've always felt, and thank goodness we found you when we did, is training that next up and coming set of leaders. And stuff you can't read in books, stuff you can't get at work. You know, the saying, you know, we always joke that I could say something to our people 1,000 times and they kind of, yeah, whatever, nod it off. And then somebody like you as the expert comes in from out of town and says that. And it's just like, oh my gosh, I've never heard something so profound. But it's so true that sometimes you have to bring in that outside expertise. And I've always considered that, like I said, a big part of my job to make sure whether it's having the right CRM for our company, having the right building, having the right people, having the right whatever. Part of that is having the right leadership models to follow as well. So you've been an extraordinary help to our company and meeting with us. We started this a few years ago. We meet quarterly now. And sometimes it's around a book, like a John Maxwell or a Stephen Covey or something else. And sometimes it's just words of wisdom that you bring to the table, the management versus leadership, things like that. But walk us through again, kind of the philosophy, if you will, if you've got a group of young managers and leaders in a room, what's your number one goal to get them kind of to that next step in their leadership growth within a company, within any company?
I think there are three basic realms that we need to focus on, or three buckets, if you will. And I think the first one is for leaders to know their self. And you have to know yourself before you can grow yourself. And so there's a lot of self-assessment and tools and self-discovery that needs to occur to be an effective leader. I cite the study from Posner and Kuzes in the Leadership Challenge and in Learning Leadership, their works. They say that the average supervisor in America becomes a supervisor at age 33. But they get their first supervisor training course at age 42. And so for 9 years, they're learning leadership, maybe with no guidance. And so I think you're on the right track as far as trying to get people early, help them to know their self, and then to grow themselves and learn how to, you know, you have to learn how to manage people. You have to learn emotional intelligence. You have to learn a critical thinking skills, decision-making skills, problem-solving skills. And then I think the third bucket would be to learn how to manage change. We have experienced in the last 20, 21 months or so the fact that we must be very nimble and agile and very adept at being able to change, pivot very quickly. And I think we learned over the last 20 months or so the essential fiber that we must be very adept at change, and we must be nimble. We've got to be agile. We've got to have the ability to pivot. And so learning how to lead change, as human beings, we don't like change. I think the statistic is somewhere between 65 and 70% of change initiatives fail. And so learning what the greatest levers you can pull to enhance your initiative or your project's chances of succeeding is critical. And I think you can learn how to bolster your chances of success at leading change. So in essence, three buckets would be leading yourself, leading others, and then leading change.
I love that. And what a perfect segue into what I really want to talk some more with you about, and have everybody get your expertise, because we relied on you a lot over the last several months. But some things that we all learned and observed and are still going through from the pandemic of 2020 and the things, the domino effect of that from an employee standpoint. Talk to us a little bit about a phrase that we first heard from you, but it is a phrase that is very well known out there now, the Great Resignation. Yeah. And what's happened over the last several months since March of 2020. And then, most importantly, on the other side, now what do we do about it? How do we get that back?
Yeah, that's a very interesting topic. We're still seeing it unfold before our eyes. It's even being coined the Great Resignation or the Turnover Tsunami. I read a report last week that as many as 95% of employees in America are open to a new job. And it's just rampant. And there are several thoughts as to maybe why. Did all, people reevaluate priorities when they were kind of shut down, working from home? What is it? I know here at the state of Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services, our number two reason that people are leaving is for a career change. Mm-hmm. And so I think that merits some discussion of people evaluating priorities. I did read a study last week that I thought was fascinating about what do you do? How can you identify? Let me preface this by not all turnover is bad turnover. But they said you want to identify who you want to stay and then focus on those people. And they if you can in your mind picture a matrix and the two axes are leaving versus staying and then enthusiastic versus reluctant. And in those four categories, 38% were enthusiastically staying and 42% were reluctantly staying. And so that's like 80%, but over half of those were staying reluctantly. And so how do you identify those that are enthusiastic about staying? And then how do you develop the chance that you're going to keep them? And really there were three thoughts that came to mind. And one is, what are the team members' perceptions about how they belong or how they fit with your team and your culture? And if you can emphasize why they fit, how they fit, where they fit, they're in the right seat, they're the right person, and emphasize that. The relationships with their coworkers, can we create opportunities for them to network and visit and build relationships? And three, what are the intangibles that make it hard for them to leave? What do you give that they would have to sacrifice if they left? And I think focusing on those three help you keep the people that you want to keep.
And I think that's so important too, John, to stress, because I think so many times the word culture gets thrown around way too much way too incorrectly. You see the Google effect, if you will, the Facebook offices, the Google offices, you know, the high tech offices, what Silicon Valley has done for the office. You know, you put the ping pong tables in and you've got snacks all day long and you're playing basketball outside, and people call that culture.
Right.
And it's not. It's not employee culture. To me, and again, we've been very blessed from the very beginning of my career that we kind of understood a little bit about this before, you know, we understood culture before culture was even a phrase.
Right.
In the workplace. And to me, it just means, and I hope we get it right, at least 90% of the time anyway, it means taking care of your people. And how do you take care of people? You care about them. Do you pretend to care about them? No, you care about your people. And when you do, then that shows, and that takes care of things that they might look shiny somewhere else. Bigger salary, bigger whatever, less whatever, less travel, more this, less that. You know, it's that grass is always greener approach. But I think you feel less inclined to even want to look at that if you know that where you're at, you're taken care of. And just a quick story there too. I think that sometimes people don't know how good they have it because they haven't gone through something together.
Yeah.
So, you know, in customer service, we talk a lot about the time that you're going to win that customer's loyalty is not when things are going great. Uh-huh. It's nice. And then you love them. They love you. It's all great. Hunky dory, warm, fuzzy feeling, everything. But where you really win their loyalty is when things maybe go awry, when there's a misunderstanding, when there's a missed expectation. What do you do then that really, I think, solidifies that relationship with your customer? It's the same with your employee. You know, if everybody's coming in and everything's hunky dory and you feel like everybody's loving their job, but nobody's really gone through anything together, you haven't proven yourself as loyal or as to be loyal as an employer, I think you've missed some opportunities. In 2020, to me anyway, again, knock on wood, we all came through healthy, but we all came through as a company, I hope anyway, really realizing how good we do have it, because there were companies that did turn their back. There were companies that did, you know, that weren't able to take care of their employees throughout that whole time and weren't able to go remote, weren't able to pivot. And again, it's in those times where it's like, you know, hopefully not sink or swim, but there's some sort of adversity. You really, you know, can kind of prove that you truly do care, that it's not just words up on the wall that you ordered from some office supply store, but that you're really there showing it day in, day out. But love that whole process of thinking about, you know, how do you get employees to want to stay? You know, the fear of what's happening in every industry. We're not immune to it. It's every industry, but especially the service industry, right? The restaurants, the hotels, the travel agencies, the airlines, those frontline service industries. I get that's got to be very hard for an employer to make sure that they're doing everything. But what do we as employers, John, regardless of what the industry we're in insurance, so we're lucky that we have the ability to pivot and we made it and succeeded through 2020. But what's your number one piece of advice, regardless of industry, as an employer, to make sure that those employees know that we want them to stay and that we want to continue this to be their career?
I think my answer, Joanne, would be just to kind of riff on what you just said a little bit about climate and culture, because I think we need to focus as employers, as organizations, more on climate than culture. And again, just using the analogy of a riverbank, riverbanks are hard to change the course of unless you do something drastic, like dynamite or drought. But the riverbanks is really the culture of an organization. For the Department of Health and Senior Services, we've been here since 1883. And so when you look at history, it's the habits, the traditions, the historical figures, things that have happened for the last 100 some years. So that's hard to change. But the climate is what's in between the banks. It's how high is the water? How swift is the water flowing? Are there impediments in the riverbank or the riverbed that I can move? It's how we treat each other. It's how we communicate through email. It's how many people do we copy on an email? And some of that's a little bit of culture because it's been done so long. But if we focus on how we're treating people and our training and our development and our leadership styles and focus on the climate rather than the culture, I think people tend to respond to that quite a bit better. And I want to touch real quickly, too, on when you said when you restore a bad experience from a customer, there's the customer service paradox. Is that over time, if you never have a bad experience, if you have a bad experience and you recover, the loyalty of that customer exceeds if you never had a bad experience. And you can Google customer service paradox, and the service recovery paradox. It's very fascinating that if you can tactfully, respectfully, respond to your mistake, the loyalty grows over time more than if you've never had a mishap.
Yep. No, I love that analogy, and I love that data, because it's what we experience all the time.
Yep.
You may think you have the greatest employees, the greatest customers, because everybody's just happy, 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 right? But you've never been through something together. So you've never really experienced the true depth of what I'm going to be able to do for you. So when you do, I hate it when we have anybody in our company or anywhere that a challenge or a conflict or a missed understanding, a missed communication comes up. They want to, the human tendency, I think, is to kind of retreat and, oh my gosh, let's cover that up. I hope nobody saw that. Whereas that's where you're going to earn their loyalty and earn their trust. That's where you sit down and, you know, the Brené Brown rumble, yep. You know, that's where you sit down and have that conversation, whether it's an employee, customer, you know, whatever the situation is, but working through it together, working through it with your glasses on, my glasses on, and we're seeing through each other's, not just our own, kind of go back to that analogy. That's where the magic happens, because if we all think we're going to go through this life, whether it's at work or home or family or this Thanksgiving coming up in a few days, without conflict, without somebody saying or doing something that maybe gets misunderstood, we're just going to be very disappointed. But I think it's how we handle those misunderstandings, how we handle those missed communications, how we handle those conflicts and confrontations that can turn out to be the best thing that ever happened to that relationship. So rather than running from it or hiding from it or burying it, embracing it and opening yourself up to it. We have, again, I could talk to you all day. We have a whole thing that we do that on our referral program on our testimonial program. We love getting the negative comments in almost as much as we love getting the positive comments in, because there's something we can do about that.
Absolutely.
If somebody has a negative, you know, took you 3 days to call me back, my goodness, we're going to jump all over that. And we're probably going to change something in our entire company so that never happens again. But if somebody's testimonial or referral of us is, or recommendation is, oh, they're great, they're always there when I need them, we're not going to change anything. And we're fooling ourselves if we think everything's hunky-dory for everybody. So again, love getting that negative feedback in almost as much as the positive.
Yeah, and if I could just tack on maybe, one of the most impactful books related to customer service that I've ever read is Gary Vaynerchuk's book, The Thank You Economy.
And I just found him, John. I don't know where he's going. Yeah, but yeah, I'm loving his stuff.
I shifted my thinking after reading that book that every human being that I interact with is my customer. And so I think even, you know, as we enter this Thanksgiving season, you know, the thank you economy and treating every person that we interact with as our customer. Yelp has a has some recent data out that their five-star reviews, when they look at price, taste, and customer service, a five-star review, by and large, five times more likely to leave a five-star review for the service than the price or the taste. And so I just drill that home. I experienced it just a couple of weeks ago. After multiple flight delays, got into Chicago, got to my hotel about midnight on a Monday night, had booked a hotel, and it wasn't what I wanted to hear when the attendant at the desk, she looked at her manager and says, "Matt, is this like the last one?" And he nodded his head, and she took her hand and took with her thumb on one side of her forehead and her tips of her fingers on the other, and she ran it down her face, and she said, "Sir, I see your reservation, but we are sold out." But what they did is they took ownership of it, and they corrected it immediately. And my loyalty, based on their customer service, just went through the roof. And so it's not trying to hide it, sweep it under the rug, but it's being accountable, owning up when there's a problem, and doing your best to correct. Not saying that everybody's always going to be satisfied, but you do your best to restore that confidence.
Isn't that something? I love that story. And I love how if you would have checked in at the normal time, or even when you got there at midnight, and the room that you had booked was available, they would have handed you the keys. They would have said, "Thank you, Mr. Thomas." You would have gone about your day, and we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Exactly.
But because it didn't go the way you thought it should go, but they corrected it in a very satisfactory manner, it sounds like.
Yes.
Now you're talking about this hotel every day to everybody that you come across. So I love
exactly
that.
Right.
Well,
and just a plug for him, it was a Marriott.
Oh, there you go. See, there you go. Exactly. Oh, well, goodness. Well, as everybody can tell, this is a very special guest. This was like a master class in leadership and employee retention and all the different things, and coaching and mentoring and leading. John, and all the different avenues that you've helped not only our company, but now today, I know going to be a lot of people writing down a lot of words of wisdom from you. So I can't thank you enough for joining us here today. And I look forward to the next and the next and the next session. But appreciate you, John Thomas, and all that you've done for me and for our company.
Joanne, it's a pleasure as always. And then you all hold a special place in my heart, and you're doing things the right way. And you've got a great company and organization that you're raising up. And that's a reflection of good leadership. So I appreciate what you're doing.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. Have an awesome day.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks.